Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, on our show today, we're going to talk about sclerotinia white mold. This is a terrible disease that affects soybeans, dry beans, canola, sunflowers, a lot of other crops. It's really hard to stop. There are many things you need to do if you want to reduce the pressure quite a bit. So we're going to talk about that today. As always, we will get to the Ag PhD mailbag a little bit later in the show. You can email us radio@agphd.com if you've got a question. We would also be happy to take your phone call throughout the show. The number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. It's 844-442-4743. Before we go any further, it is Veterans Day. And before we begin our discussion, we just wanted to say thank you to all our heroes and patriots out there who've served our country and protected our freedoms here in the United States. Our sincerest thanks to all military veterans. We appreciate you. All right, Darren, and I don't have the stats right in front of me, but I do remember something that I learned here over the last year, that rural Americans are more likely to serve in the military than urban Americans. I mean, not by an enormously huge percentage, but it was definitely noticeable. And so we really, again, do appreciate everyone who has served for our country, the United States. All right, let's talk a little about sclerotinia white mold. We do call this perhaps the worst disease you can get in soybeans, maybe in dry beans, probably in sunflowers, I mean, in a lot of different crops. It's just so hard to stop because, let's face it, with a lot of diseases, we have the option to go spray a fungicide once, maybe twice, and we totally solve the problem. It just does not seem to be, that does not seem to be the case with white mold. And to give you an idea how bad this disease can be, just right here in the section that we're in. So our studio, our radio studio, is right on our farm. And in this same section, we have a field where, both in 2017, I'm trying to think back to the years now. I know for sure in 2017, and then again in 2019 to some degree, we had this same problem with white mold. But in 2017, we were going along, and our guys were running the combines, and I think I might have even been on the radio with you. And so I'm looking at the yield data coming in off the combine, and it's like, oh, this is going really good. We're 90s, you know, 80s. I mean, it's pretty fairly consistent as they got started, 90s and 80s, and they're doing quite a bit. And I'm like, wow, this might be our best yielding field ever. I think the we're right at 80 for a full field average is the best we've ever done. And we've averaged about 65-70 for 10 years now, but we just can't get over that next level. And I thought, well, boy, this is going to be the best field we've ever had. And all of a sudden, they get to an area, and it drops, and I'm looking at it, and it's like 60, 40, 20, 0. And I'm just going, what? No, there's got to be something wrong. What's going on? And then I looked back and, you know, just looked at history. And with that field, we'd had smaller white mold issues in those areas. But this was massive. I mean, literally, when you're going along 80, 90 bushel per acre soybeans and you go down to zero, that's no fun. That is no fun. So we talk about some of these different diseases. And you know, there are one or two or maybe three steps you can take. With white mold, I've got, Darren, I'm going to say about 10 or 11 here. So,
well, it's because it's not simple, and there's no answer. And here's where we turn to a lot of answers with this generation. The last 20 or 30 years, it's been, man, they're making massive improvements in seed. And you look at soybeans now, we expect, when we're picking a soybean variety, we want soybean cyst nematode resistance. We want sudden death syndrome resistance. We want brown stem rot resistance. We want frog eye resistance. We want stem canker resistance. And that's just the start. There's more. We want charcoal root rot resistance and on and on and on. Well, we want sclerotinia white mold resistance. And if that comes in the seed, all of a sudden, oh yeah, we got white mold licked. Well, we don't have that at all. because there's more than one gene, what the scientists are finding. There's at least three genes involved in this, and it's really tough to get that solved in a soybean plant. So believe me, the breeders know that this is a big deal. They know they're going to make millions and millions of dollars if they figure it out. They haven't figured it out. So we have to do everything we can do, and there's a lot of cultural things we can do. There's some of these biological type solutions.
Well, we're going to tell you.
Chemistry.
Yes. Okay. So the first and most important thing in my book is I would try to find a more tolerant seed variety. Again, there isn't going to be resistance, but find something with good tolerance.
Good
standability is a key.
Yeah. Standability is a big deal. If you've got an upright plant, the other thing to look for is look at the trifoliates. If they're massive, it's tough to get sunlight down in through that canopy, and that makes a difference too.
Okay. Next thing I think is fungicide, but Endura is the best. Unfortunately, it costs about $30 an acre. Proline would be next on the list. And then after that, we've done for the last couple of years a combination of Ondiamo and Tolaris. That's the active ingredients you'll find in Domark and Topsin. And we do the two generics, full rate of each, for a grand total of $13. And that's worked quite well for us. But you got to spray at R1, so right at flowering, and then probably again at R3 and R5. Next on my list is Cobra. We did a bunch of that this last year, and I think that was part of the reason why we didn't have much issue. 6 ounces only costs $4 or $5. It's very inexpensive, and you spray right before flowering, just as you see the very first flower in the field. I would also tell you a couple of things you may never have heard of. Number one is get your soil manganese levels up. Have a good level of manganese in your soil, and that it's a proven fact you will have less white mold. Next, Contans. It's a fungus that can literally eat the sclerotia. Now, this is expensive too. You're probably going to spend $25-$30 an acre, but just put it in the spots where you need it. Okay, if you just do like a variable rate map based off, let's say, even your yield this year or last year, that will really pay. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, wide row spacing, lower planting population helps a lot. I would say it helps a little. In my book, does not help a lot. We've tried that, and it's helped a little. We've still had massive white mold issues there. Another thing, heads up seed treatment, $2 or $3 an acre. You're not going to have a huge gain, but you'll have something. And then finally, I would use a little bit of a group 15 early post. So that's, I don't know, Darren, 11, 12 things. We'll talk more about sclerotinia white mold throughout the show. This is Ag PhD Radio.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from FarmShop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from FarmShop MFG.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We decided today was going to be the day that we were going to tackle the dreaded Sclerotinia white mold. This is our least favorite problem, I would say, that we're managing on our farm, because we don't have a 100% solution, and it's not as simple as, hey, I've got one thing I have to do and everything goes away. As Brian has mentioned before, there are quite a few things you have to do if you want to keep your fields clean. And we've got Marty Chilvers with us right now with Michigan State, and I'm betting Marty's going to tell us there's no silver bullet. Marty, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
All right, Sclerotinia white mold. What are you learning about this? Did you have a big white mold year in Michigan?
We didn't really. It wasn't too severe this year in Michigan. It sounds like you've got Damon Smith later on and from Wisconsin, and it sounded like they had a little bit more white mold out that direction.
Well, we try to blame Wisconsin for that problem. I think it spreads your way and ours out of Wisconsin. Well, when you think about this white mold, why is it so tough? Why is this disease more difficult than a lot of the other ones we're facing?
Yeah, and there's a few different things, I guess. So, I mean, one of them is the sclerotia resting bodies, those little black structures that the white mold fungus produces. You know, they can survive in the soil for up to 10 years and potentially longer. And so, once a field is infected, it's, you know, potentially, we've got disease potential there for many years to come. And so I think, you know, if we get a year that cooperates and we don't get favorable conditions for disease, we might forget about the issue until we rotate back in again, and then it can be an issue.
All right, so you've got those sclerotia laying out there. You just get done combining your soybeans, and all this sclerotia is laying there, and in the stalks that are still hanging together, there's some of it is protected inside those stalks. Are we better off if we're doing tillage? Are we better off if we're putting on something to try to help break this residue faster?
Yeah, so no-till tends to be at slightly lower risk for white mold. And what we think is happening there is that the sclerotia are on the surface, and the wetting and drying cycles tend to just have those sclerotia die off quicker than if they're incorporated and buried into the soil profile. So certainly, yeah, but in addition to that, you know, anything to sort of help break down residue will help help reduce the life of those sclerotia too.
When I talk to most farmers about white mold, they start talking to me about their fungicide program. Is a foliar fungicide where you start, or do you start with a lot of the cultural practices?
Yeah, cultural practices for sure. You know, this time of year, I guess we're already trying to make selections for early seed purchase for next year. And there's just dramatic differences even within a company in terms of susceptibility to white mold. And so I'd really encourage people, if they have an issue with white mold, to make sure they speak to the seed salesperson and, you know, select those varieties with better resistance to white mold. That's one of the really critical things, I think.
Do you see lower planting populations making a significant impact?
Yeah, lower planted populations does help to some degree. The other thing that I think is perhaps even more important is potentially that row space. Row spacing. So we've looked at 15-inch versus 30-inch, and we see much greater disease under that 15-inch row spacing compared to 30-inch. You know, with the 15-inch, the narrow rows, you're getting canopy closure earlier, and canopy closure provides that environment that's favorable for the white mold apothecia or mushrooms that form on the soil surface. They need a certain amount of shade and light quality that's sort of filtering through the canopy for formation. So that canopy closure is really critical for disease development.
We've gotten a lot of questions over the last few years around cover crops. Do you see any certain cover crop mix that's helped us reduce white mold? Or some that we should avoid? I should mention that too, as many crops as are susceptible to white mold.
Right. Yeah, I think you need to be a little bit careful there, right? Certainly, you know, any of the broadleaf pipe cover crops could totally be susceptible to white mold, so you may potentially, you know, increase or contribute to the issue. There's been some research with, I think it was crimped rye, actually this is done out at New York at Cornell, and they actually showed that crimped rye appears to sort of trap some of those white mold spores down in the canopy, or maybe get those white mold mushrooms to form early before this flowers on the soybean plant. So they actually by using a crimped rye in the system, they actually reduced disease. And something else, you know, we grow a lot of wheat here in Michigan, a no-till wheat into a field with a lot of white mold sclerotia that have been left on the surface from a crop of soybeans would certainly help promote germination of those sclerotia on the surface when that wheat canopy sort of closes over in the early spring. And they're not going to have anything to infect in that field because they don't infect the wheat plant. So that's another really good way to help reduce the sclerotia load in the soil.
Now, when we get into this fungicide discussion, the question that I have for growers is, okay, product selection makes a big deal, and some products are better at stopping sclerotinia white mold than others. But does it come down to spray coverage more so even than the timing? If we are out there pretty close to the right time, but we get unbelievable spray coverage, are we ahead?
That's a good question. Maybe that's something we need to look at a little bit more. I think timing is pretty critical. We see pretty strong differences some years depending on when those white mold apothecia or mushrooms are forming. Sometimes that R1, that's the beginning of flowering, provides better protection. And then other years, development of those apothecia is delayed, and that's where you get into, sort of closer to R3 growth stage, and we see better performance from that timing. And so Damon will be able to talk to you more about the Sporecaster app that's been developed to sort of aid with some of that fungicide timing decisions and predicting the risk of when those apothecia are occurring in the field. But, it's hard to get some of the product down and that is going to be important still because we need to get that product down into that canopy as much as possible to get onto those flowers to protect the flowers from infection.
Yeah, I just see so many growers that are trying to do two or three things at the same time. And, I've got the wrong tip in for the fungicide, but I have to also accomplish weed control or something else. And I just think those nozzles that get great coverage are really key whenever we're using a fungicide. Okay, before I let you go, Marty, other question that I had for you since we had you on today, did you see anything new this year in Michigan? Are there any other diseases that are kind of on the rise that growers need to be on the watch for?
I think we talk about tar spot every time I'm on, right, with corn. It was a pretty quiet year in general with tar spot. In our irrigated areas, especially southwest Michigan, we had some issues. We had some lodging corn because of that. Sort of fairly late disease development, but again, pretty significant. And, I'm sure taking some bushels off. And there's even some rain-fed or dryland areas that got just timely rains that did push that tar spot along. And that disease has certainly spread. It's not confirmed in South Dakota yet, but it was confirmed in Pennsylvania this year and across the border into Ontario. So that's something that we've seen continue to spread. And what we're concerned about there is just, if we get the right conditions for that disease, a lot of moisture during the season, we might have some pretty big problems in parts of the corn belt.
Talking with Marty Chilvers here with Michigan State. Marty, thank you so much. Really appreciate you sharing your time with us and sharing the information too.
Thanks for having me.
Talking about diseases today, specifically sclerotinia white mold, this is a really tough one. We talk about it in soybeans a lot, but there are a ton of broadleaf crops that this can impact. And Marty was mentioning just a few things. One that Brian brings up too, because I'll a lot of times ask about tillage, because I just remember that both of our grandpas used to do deep tillage trying to bury problems like sclerotia on top of the soil. But Marty was saying the no-till, they actually have less pressure often because of the wetting drying cycles and that breaking down the sclerotia.
Well, yes, but also how many people moldboard plow? So if you could moldboard plow and you bury it a foot down in the ground or even 8 inches down in the ground, that probably wouldn't be too bad. But what do? We do a whole bunch of very light tillage. And so a lot of it is just below the surface of the soil. That's not a good place to be.
All right, a lot to talk about with white mold. We're also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the End Zone Bin System from Farm Shop MFG.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Got resistant weeds? Add Tough 5EC as your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer amaranth and waterhemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltrumUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
We're talking about a tough disease on today's Ag PhD radio program. We're talking about sclerotinia white mold. We were just chatting a little bit with Marty Chilvers with Michigan State University, and he joked a little bit that we had Damon Smith coming on, and he thought maybe I should give one of the questions that I gave him, maybe I should give that to Damon. So, Damon, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no. Marty threw me under the bus already.
He's giving you all the hard ones. Well, I was teasing him a little bit, and I said, you know, Wisconsin's in between us here, and I think Wisconsin must be passing this on to both of us, but he didn't take the bait on that one at all.
Well, that's good for him.
Well, you know, when you talk about sclerotinia white mold, we talk about this every year, and we still don't have a perfect answer, but we're getting better at predicting when it's going to be a challenge. And I know this is a project that you've worked really hard on with the Sporecaster app and with all the information you've been putting out. Talk to us a little bit about that. Is it getting easier to figure out when the timing is going to be right to get out with our fungicide treatments?
Yeah, you know, the work that we've done in conjunction with Marty has helped a lot. You know, it's not just stuff we've been doing here in Wisconsin, but it's been a group effort also with Darren Mueller at Iowa State. But, you know, all this work that we've collectively been doing over the last, you know, 6-7 years has really helped improve that sort of anticipation for the disease. And we're, you know, I think we have a better understanding of what, what planting conditions, what weather conditions, and even down to the varieties, to a certain level, how that all impacts when the disease is going to show up. You know, it's not, you know, weather has a big effect here, but it's, you know, some other things that happen in the field as well, which really, you know, push these epidemics.
You know, we were talking about some of those things too, and I look at that crop canopy as being such a big one. When we have a year where our soybean plants, for example, on our farm, soybeans are our crop that's really susceptible, but there's certainly a lot of others out there too. But when our soybeans get that really thick early canopy, we know we're in a spot where we can run into some trouble. And for farmers, they look at, hey, it's a wet year and I've had a history. Is that kind of the biggest thing if you've got a history and you're getting some moisture?
Yeah, you know, history, moisture, and then the canopy thing is becoming really apparent as a player. We actually did some work. We just finished analyzing a data set from 2020 here in Wisconsin where we were trying to actually duplicate high fertility versus low fertility environments and then layering planting populations on top of those high and low fertility levels. And it's pretty apparent in that data set that, you know, the high fertility gave us that thicker canopy. We saw higher disease index scores there in that environment. And then where we added, you know, 160,000 seeds per acre, that further amplified that disease index score. We compared that 160,000 to 100,000, and we actually ended up with higher yields out of the 100,000 than we did out of the 160,000. So, you know, just even at plant manipulation a bit and trying to anticipate, especially on ground that you know, we have a lot of manured ground here in Wisconsin. So, you know, if we can target some of that ground that we know is high fertility, maybe dial back a bit on that seeding rate to help balance out the canopy a bit, that can go a long way.
You know, speaking of the fertility piece, One thing that's been identified over the years as helping is getting certain micronutrients in balance. I know a grower that has got really high fertility that's done a lot of manure, and he claims manganese is a big thing. And I know we've seen some studies that manganese can make a difference. Have you seen that in Wisconsin? Have you seen any certain nutrients that if you had them in high quantities could help?
You know, I think it's a case-by-case situation. Our soil diversity here in Wisconsin is just, you know, incredible. We have a large diversity of soil classes and types here. And, you know, the ground that we've tried to run this on, our heavy white mold area, that's pretty sandy, and we haven't seen that effect when we tried to put manganese on. But that doesn't mean that there aren't certain areas and environments where that could certainly be a success. I know Marty, I think, worked a little bit on some manganese stuff, and I know Darren has as well. And, you know, occasionally you'll get a response, but it's been an inconsistent response, at least in what we've seen here in Wisconsin.
I had an older farmer talk to me about, he said, yeah, you guys talk about all these solutions for white mold, but let's face it, if the wind doesn't blow, we just don't get enough movement under that canopy, we're in big trouble. Is that a big factor too?
You know, there's a combination of things that actually go on under the canopy. Certainly the moisture and humidity, you know, that's a big player. And that's been, you know, folks have worked on that, you know, well before my time. But one of the things we actually discovered with Marty, we had some collaborative work where we actually looked at light. And it's interesting, not only is humidity important, but the light quantity and also the quality that actually reaches underneath that canopy is important, because that little mushroom-like structure that gives rise to the spores, that thing is extremely sensitive to the types of light that penetrate the canopy. So when you're manipulating the canopy by either, you know, modifying your row spacing or dropping your planting population, you're not only opening up that canopy and trying to improve, you know, your wind speed or your, you know, drop that relative humidity, but you're also manipulating the light, which is less favorable for that little mushroom to form as well. So there's a couple of really important pieces that happen when you go through this canopy manipulation and try to utilize those techniques.
I know every year is different. In some years you get really good trials on a certain disease, and others you just don't have enough pressure to really see much. What have you seen over the years on different fungicides versus Cobra? I have a lot of growers that talk to Brian and me that'll say, you know, Cobra didn't cost much money and I saw just as good a performance with that.
Yeah, you know, we've been looking at that pretty hard, again, in conjunction with Marty and Darren. And we actually had some treatments out this year in a uniform trial where we put cobra. We were actually pushing cobra just slightly earlier, right before flowering, at the 6 ounce rate, and then actually coming back in with Endura as a sort of a two-pass type program, and then cobra by itself. And you know, I can always, almost always, pick out the cobra plots when we go into rate, even though we rate things blind, because they're often the cleanest in terms of disease index scores when we go in to do our push ratings. But you know, at least the issue we have in our central Wisconsin area where we do a lot of this work, and that's our real hot zone for white mold, is, you know, cobra in the lower disease pressure situation does tend to cost us maybe about 5 bushels that we can pick up. So, you know, that's something to consider. And my recommendation here in Wisconsin is maybe keeping that, you know, keep cobra for those really intense white mold fields. If you think you got some spots here and there, then you might want to look at maybe another fungicide that won't give you the injury. But I certainly see some utility, especially in the high-pressure situations.
You know, you mentioned that, doing some spot treatments, and this is something we've been talking about too, because we look at our fields where we've got a history of white mold. It's almost always in exactly the same spots, and if we pick those out, and you're right, let's just say something cost us 5 bushels of yield or $50 worth of profit at the end of the year, we're willing to give that up in those really hot spots out there. Do you see a lot of guys spot treating, or in Wisconsin, is it more whole fields that get covered?
There's still a lot of whole fields, but man, there are a lot of folks really wanting to look at the spot treatment strategy, especially, you know, we have a lot of rolling tomography in the southwestern part of the state where we'll have white mold down in the valleys, but not up on top of the hills. And, you know, the situation there would be, you know, go in and just treat those valleys where it's, you know, not a problem. So that's something we're looking at. We'd like to be able to map with drones, have those existing maps for these fields so that the next time you go in, you know exactly where those are. You know, yield monitors, that data is important. I do think that that's a pretty viable strategy. We know that the movement, if sclerotinia is left to its own devices in terms of movement, we know that that movement's pretty slow within the field. So like you said, each year, you know, barring any, you know, significant tillage across the field, it's going to be carrying those sclerotia a long distance. You know, you're going to have those same spots show up year after year. So I certainly think that's a viable approach, and there's a lot of interest in that.
Yeah, I agree. We're talking with Damon Smith here with the University of Wisconsin. Damon, thank you so much. Really appreciate the information today. Thanks for all the work you're doing on white mold.
You bet. I appreciate you all having me on this afternoon.
We're talking about sclerotinia white mold on our show today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like marestail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burn down.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen From conception to completion, there's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You're looking for soybeans that give you the yield you want. But when it comes to fighting your toughest weeds, you also need flexibility. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics with triple tolerance to dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate. The yield you want, the choice you need. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. Today on the show we've been talking about Sclerotinia white mold, and earlier I just listed off a number of things that you can do, and then certainly we talked with a couple of experts along the way as well. It just takes a lot of effort to reduce your white mold problem, but here's the good news. If you don't plant a crop that will host white mold, you're in pretty good shape, as long as you control all the weeds, of course. But corn on our own farm, I'm going back years ago. We had a bad white mold problem, I'm going to say 15, 20 years ago, something like that. And we just decided for a couple fields, you know what, we're going to put them to corn for a while. Went back to beans, no problem. We've done that fairly recently, too, where we've had some ground that had been corn for several years, brought it back to soybeans, fantastic yield. So there is always that option. You could plant corn or wheat or something like that, a non-host crop, if it's that severe. So I just wanted to throw that out there. That's always the last resort. But if you want to do that, you certainly can. So once again, I'll just kind of reiterate some of my key points. And to me, the most important thing is finding a tolerant soybean variety. And if you can keep that bean short, that's great. That's probably almost as important as the tolerance to the white mold. It's keeping that bean short. So like for us, we plant pretty much all our beans anymore in 30-inch rows. If we keep those beans short and we're seeding 130,000, 140,000 plants per acre, it's really not too bad. We don't have that big of an issue. And some of these Enlist beans now, you know, a lot of people are wondering, oh, Enlist versus Extend and everything. They're both great, okay? They're both great. And they both have some really good disease tolerance packages. You just have to pick the right variety for you. But when we're looking at size of the bean, we want something that stands well. We want something that's a little bit shorter. And in order to shorten those beans, that's where I had mentioned right at the end of our first segment today, using a Group 15, something like Warrant, Outlook, Dual, Zidua, they will give you just a little bit of leaf burn, and so you may not like those doing those early post, but it also does seem to shorten those plants up just a little bit. Cobra kind of does the same thing. So we, even though none of those products are technically fungicides, they all seem like, in our experience as agronomists and farmers, that we do get a reduction in white mold when we're using a Group 15 early post. We're using a little bit of Cobra, let's say right as the very first flower in your field shows up. And you can use a low rate, and it's relatively inexpensive, quite frankly, for any of these products. So those are good options. Beyond that, we did talk about manganese levels. So take a look at that on your soil test. If your manganese levels are low and your pH is high, when I look at those things, I go, yeah, I probably have a decent chance to have white mold. So if you get that pH down into the sixes, let's say, as opposed to the sevens or eights, it seems like we have a little bit less white mold. And certainly when we have our manganese levels up, and manganese, by the way, is sensitive to pH, and that may be part of it. So in other words, manganese just simply is not as available the higher the pH. You get the pH down in the sixes, a little more manganese is going to come available. Anyway, fungicides, if you're going to spray fungicides, and we do think that's a great idea, just make sure you start right away at R1. White mold can enter in easily where flowers have died off. So I don't care which crop you have. Almost all these things you can do in every crop that you could possibly get white mold in, other than Cobra. Cobra is labeled in soybeans. It's not labeled in most other crops. But anyway, just about everything else that we've talked about, you can apply that to your crop. And again, with Sclerotinia white mold, it can affect so many different crops out there. So I guess just put a plan together, make sure you're aggressive with this. And the last thing that I will say is you don't necessarily have to do full field treatments. I mentioned this just briefly earlier in the show, but it's very common where you can look at past yield maps and you can see where white mold hit you before. Odds are pretty high that's where it's going to hit you again. So like on our farm, for example, we had this year probably 1,000 acres of soybeans, let's call it. And how much did we actually treat, like hard, where we spent an extra $20, $30, $40 for white mold? 10 to 20%. That's it. 10 to 20%. So if it's 10%, even if I spent $40, you divide that out over all your soybean acres, well, it's only $4 an acre. Even if I did 200 acres, I did 20%. I mean, you're only talking $8 an acre across all your acres. So yes, I know $40 may seem a little ridiculous. And you go, my goodness, I don't want to spend that kind of money. Look, I don't either. But I also don't want a 40, 50, 80 bushel yield loss in those spots. And in our very worst spots, that's what we were getting. So I would encourage you. I mean, it's real easy now with variable rate maps. You can do variable rate application and you can put, whether it's fungicide, whether it's manganese, it's Contans, Cobra, any of that stuff, you can put that just on those acres. And yeah, you might want to do some treatment for the rest of your acres for white mold, but let's say you spend 10 or 20 extra dollars on the rest of it. And, you know, some of that extra expense, by the way, may help you with other things. So like a fungicide isn't just going to help on white mold. It could help on a lot of different diseases and give you some more plant health and all that. But anyway, then for your worst spots where you go, boy, I got a history here, spend a few extra dollars and the odds are pretty high that that should be paying for you. Granted, you got to have at least some rain. If you have a complete drought year, well, white mold's never going to show up. But what's ended up happening, like in our region of the country, we only get 24 inches of average annual total precipitation here. That's it, 24. That includes the snow. So you go, wow, that's not very much. How can you possibly have white mold with that dry of conditions? It's because of the humidity. We have tremendous humidity. In the summertime, we are more humid than Miami, Florida most summers. Think about that. I mean, what I consider, being from South Dakota, a tropical destination, Miami, Florida, and to think that over the summer months we have more humidity than that, that's crazy. And that's the reason why we have white mold, and that's the reason why we have other diseases in our crops as well. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
This one comes from Ross, and he said, as I was making my soil sampling decisions for this year, the dealer I was working with suggests that I start doing Veris mapping in addition to my soil testing. What are your thoughts about Veris mapping? Is it worth the extra cost? I realize it's a one-time cost, but just wondering what benefit I would get.
In my opinion, no, it's not. I'm not saying it's terrible or anything, but you can set up small zones or small grids without the Veris mapping. To me, the Veris mapping just is another expense that you have, and it doesn't typically pay. But that's how some people like to set up their zones, I should say. And if you've been doing that and you like doing that, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it does cost some money. And for us, I personally like grids because it's super simple. Otherwise, they can set zones up based on my yield monitor and past history with my yields as well.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this one from Brian. He said, my question for you today, at what cutoff do phosphorus levels go from very high to excessive. I want them to be very high. I just don't want them to be excessive.
All depends on your situation. So where I'm going with this is, if let's say you've got extremely high, what we would, just as a general statement, what we would call extremely high levels of potassium, zinc, copper, sulfur, all these other nutrients, well, then all of a sudden, what we would normally consider extremely high on phosphorus is not extremely high. I think it was just yesterday we had a question in the Ag PhD mailbag, and the farmer had, I'm trying to think of what the level was on zinc. It was some ridiculously high number, 25 parts per million on zinc. And I'm going, okay, well, I don't love this, but that means in order to get my yields okay, I probably have to be 200 parts per million on phosphorus. Otherwise, you will find yields go down if you don't have that ratio right. And then because my phosphorus is high, that means I now have to have a little higher level of copper. So 8 to 1, 10 to 1 is kind of that phosphorus-zinc ratio, and somewhere around 30 to 1, 40 to 1 is the phosphorus-copper ratio. And we could talk all the rest of the show about why those ratios work and yield and everything else, but I'm just saying there is no exact for too high of phosphorus. You got to look at all your other nutrients instead. All right, stay tuned. We'll answer more of your questions right after this.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevor herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevor herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Credit Extreme, the herbicide with dual salt technology that makes all the difference. Faster uptake, quicker rain fastness, and better control in variable weather, something we've all had our fair share of. When you need more powerful weed control for challenges like lamb's quarters and velvet leaf, with excellent safety to Roundup Ready crops, you need Credit Extreme. Nufarm and Credit Extreme, here to help.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Enfuro Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're in the Ag PhD mailbag time right now, taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. can also email us radio@agphd.com or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. And I did get this on Twitter from Jacob. He said, we're having issues with charcoal root rot in soybeans, and I'd like to pay more attention to charcoal root rot ratings, but not all companies are giving a rating on all their varieties. So I'm not sure what to do about this. Just wondering what else I could do for charcoal root rot protection. Hey, thanks, Jacob. Really appreciate the question here. Charcoal root rot's tough, and the difficult thing talking to the breeders about it is they don't have great plots where they can get a bunch of varieties in and compare them all. And they say a lot of it comes down to drought stress. When they get a really dry, stressful time in a non-irrigated situation, that's where they can see more of this. And also, we've seen more charcoal root rot where we have soybean aphid feeding. That's been kind of an interesting tie. I don't know that anybody's ever put those two things together and for sure declared that, yes, they can vector the disease, but they certainly weaken the plant, increasing drought stress in those areas. So anything you can do to minimize drought stress by optimizing fertility, getting great weed control, those types of things, using narrow rows, reducing seeding rate, those things have all been shown to help lessen charcoal root rot pressure. Also, the other thing I'd mention is if you're rotating with corn, that can be a problem because corn can be a host crop too. So if you're putting corn or sorghum in between as your grass crop rotation, you may want to put a cereal grain in there instead. That could help reduce what your pressure is. And obviously, of course, you want to plant a tolerant variety. One thing that was a little strange to me, though, and just doing a little research about charcoal root rot, they found that the later maturing varieties often have less pressure. Now, what is a later maturing variety? Well, that means later for your area. Basically, they're trying to time it. So when you're in the most vulnerable vegetative stages for infection, well, you have later varieties. They're going to mature just a little bit later than that. So I don't know how to time that thing just right, but they have had better luck kind of pushing the window on maturity just a little bit. So something else to keep in mind. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. This one from Robert in Arkansas, and he said, you guys are talking about high organic matter levels, and Brian wanted high organic matter in the soil, and that's nice for nutrient release. But the problem that I've seen with high organic matter soils is they tie up my herbicide. Do you have a different strategy for high organic matter soils in your herbicide applications?
Well, right on the label, it's going to tell you your soil type, basically, and the use rate. So I agree with that. And you will have to spend just a little bit more on your residual herbicides. But, I mean, we always talk about here on the show about two shots on your weeds. So using a residual product and then using a post-emerge product that's going to give you contact activity and maybe even some residual along with that as well. So I don't really get too worried about it. We've got some soil organic matters that are above 5. We don't seem to have a lot of problem, no extra weed issues there or anything else. I just think the benefits far outweigh the little bit more that you'd have to put out in a pre-emerge residual program. Now, over the years, so I've been an agronomist, Darren and I have both been agronomists for a long time. And
one of us slightly longer than
yes,
the other.
But anyway, here's where I'm going with this. People always ask us, well, can I just do one pass and that's it? And my answer is always no, you can't. I mean, if you want perfect weed control, or I shouldn't even say perfect, if you want really good weed control, you can try going one pass, and that's probably where this question comes from. If we're trying to get by with a one-shot pre-emerge or one-shot early post-emerge program, yep, the residual may not last quite as long. You have to have a good strong rate, and even then in that high organic matter ground, some of that's going to get tied up. It's just the way it is. But we don't ever think that's, you know, this fantastic program. Plus, now that there are so many herbicides that are really inexpensive, if you own your own sprayer, so let's just take the application cost out for a second. It does not cost much money to have a fairly decent pre-emerge followed by post-emerge program in corn or soybeans or even wheat.
All right. I get a series of things here for you, Brian. First, I'll give you the soil test. So this is from Kevin in Iowa, and he's got some municipal sludge to have you look at too. I've got that sample there. Which do you want first? Do you want the sludge question or the
soil? Just start asking.
All right. Well, I'll just start with the sludge then. We've got some heavy metals in there. I'm just wondering where you find the limits on that as to how much is safe.
Well, safe is relative. Okay. So it's just like when people will say, oh, I put 3 gallons of 1034-0 in furrow. Probably 95% of people, that's safe. And then for 5% of the people, they have a problem. So, in terms of safe, again, that's relative. Now, how much can you legally apply? That's a different thing, and there's a set amount. So you can just do an internet search for EPA legal limits for heavy metals, and you'll find something there.
He said so the other that thing I'm not that he was, worried about. The other thing he's concerned about is he's got a lot of soil pHs in the fives, and they are variable rate applying lime this fall.
Sure.
He was just wondering, he's read that low pHs could exaggerate or express more of the heavy metal issues.
It could.
So he's wondering if he should just hold off a year before he puts that out there until the lime can start raising that pH a little bit more.
Oh, I don't think I'd do that. I think I'd just have it over with. You know, the dose makes the poison. So if you're that worried about it, just cut back your rate. Just don't put on quite as much of this sludge, and then you'll be fine. But yes, I understand where your concern is coming from. When I look at this and I see mercury, lead, chromium and cadmium and arsenic, you go, yeah, that doesn't sound super fantastic. So, when I'm looking at the levels just super quickly, there's nothing here that I say, oh yeah, it looks really horrible. I should pull up the heavy metals. While I'm doing that, just ask me the other question.
Well, the other one is basically just take a look quick at the sample, see if you notice anything there. They're doing a lot of fertility work out there in addition to the lime. And I do like it, though, Kevin, that you said, we're getting this lime done. We're dealing with this 5 pH right now, because a lot of times what we've seen in our farm when we adjust that pH and get it up into the sixes, yeah, I prefer the low sixes personally, but it depends on what you're raising for a crop. If you're raising alfalfa, of course, you'd have to be a little higher than that. But once you get that pH into the right range, you've just got more nutrient availability and a lot of those micronutrients too. So that really does help for your crop. So I'm glad you're doing that first.
Okay. As always, some variability. When I look at his soil tests overall, though, it really does not look too bad. So for the most part, potassium's pretty good, phosphorus is pretty good. So he's got a lot of potassium levels in the 5-6%, and some even beyond that. A lot of phosphorus levels, P1 phosphorus levels, 60 to 90, so real good there. I mean, a lot of good things that I see here. Typically, when we see someone who's got a lot of P and a lot of K, we go, oh, okay, we're in pretty good shape. Yes, and that's true, except for his sulfur levels, down below 10 parts per million. That's a problem. Zinc levels, we're down at 4 parts per million. So when you're at 80 parts per million on phosphorus and you're only at 4 parts per million on zinc, you're going to need more zinc. That's probably hurting your yield right now. Copper, same kind of thing. We were just talking earlier in the show, 30 to 1, 40 to 1 kind of ratio phosphorus to copper. You got to get your copper levels up to a couple parts per million. You're close, 1, 1.5. But get them up to a couple parts per million, and then you'll be in a lot better shape. And then boron, you're very low, 0.4 parts per million on a lot of that. Okay, coming back to the heavy metals thing. Lead, 16 parts per million in this sample that I've got here. So that's quite a bit. The legal limit for application on a per acre basis on lead is 13 pounds per year. That's it, 13 pounds. So you got to make sure you're keeping that lead amount below that. The chromium, I mentioned chromium, and again, that sounds horrible, right? You got 57 parts per million. Well, in a very sandy soil, 50 pounds would be the legal limit. You get to a heavy soil, though, for chromium, you're talking 133 pounds you could apply on a per year basis. So arsenic is the last one, 8.3 parts per million on a sample here. You can only legally apply 1.8 parts per million. So that's it. 1.8 pounds per acre. 1.8 pounds per acre of arsenic is the most you can apply. So you got to look at those legal limits, and then you got to cut things back based on what your tests are showing here. So yeah, am I a little concerned? Sure. But if you just keep the dose low, you keep that rate low, you'll probably be just fine.
All right, thanks for the questions, and thanks for sending in all the samples, too. It sure helps us when we can take a look, like you were talking about the sludge, when we can look at the exact levels, and certainly with the soil test levels as well. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.